Well, morning. Welcome to Judges. Ready for Judges? It's quite a jump from looking at the Gospel of Luke, which is what we've been doing previous to this. It's quite a jump back in history into a really radically different kind of time. So we need to make a bit of a transition. We're basically jumping back 1400 years to a really different time. And it takes a little while to orientate yourself, and it's got some crazy material in the book of Judges. If it's been a while for you, if you've never read the book of Judges, you're in for a shock. We're jumping back 1400 years in history to a time where God's people, Israel, had just stepped foot into the promised land. They've just walked in, and they're attempting to settle in the place that God had set aside for them. Previous to this time, Moses had brought them out of Egypt. Moses had led them out of Egypt, and now Joshua has actually led them into the promised land. It's an interesting time for God's people, though, because they are without a leader. They're without a king. You know, previous to this, Moses led them, and then Joshua led them. But now there isn't one human, earthly leader over God's people for a good season of time until the time of the kings, where we get Solomon and Saul and David. It's an interesting time period for God's people. They're just meant to live with God is their king. But what happens is they get themselves into all kinds of strife. And so during this time period, God actually raises up for his people a whole series of judges, which is why the book we're looking at is called Judges. Now, it's called Judges, and when you think judge, it's probably different from the first picture that would come into our mind when we think of judge. Like, we think wig wearing, gown wearing, courtroom operating judge. The judges in this book are a little different from that. Think leader, warrior, adventurer, crazy person, ruler. That's the sense in which these leaders are called judges of their time. They're the spirit-empowered savior of the people for a small season and a ruler over the people for a little season. I can understand why they call them judge for some reason, in that this leader over the people would be attempting to be making right decisions, just decisions on behalf of the people as they lead the people for a little season. The kind of judges that emerge from this book, whether you've read Judges or not, no doubt you've heard of these kind of characters. We're talking Samson, Gideon, Deborah. These are kind of famous characters in history. And none of them are fantastic in their own right. They all do a whole range of crazy things. It's a time of war. It's a time of warfare where there is a whole bunch of stories about violent assassinations, which when you read these kind of stories to young boys, they just think it's fantastic. So we're talking violent assassinations like, and we'll get to these as we work our way through, Ehud, the left-handed man who strapped his sword to his right leg so he could plunge it into the belly of the king. The king was so fat that when he let go of the sword, the fat rolled over and he couldn't find the sword anymore, so he just left it there. These are the kind of stories we get in the book of Judges. And my boys love reading this kind of stuff. But it's not just men doing these kind of crazy assassinations in the book of Judges. We've got women as well. We've got a woman who drops a millstone on the head of Abimelech and cracks his skull. We've got, and this is in chapter 4, the classic story, the tent peg story. You know this one, yeah? Jael, the lady Jael, who allows the king, Sisera, to actually take refuge in her tent. He's on the run, the pagan king's on the run. He allows her to take refuge in She allows him to take refuge in her tent for a little while, and he rests up, and while he's sleeping, she takes a tent peg and hammers it through his head. That's nice, isn't it? And guess what? We're looking at that passage next week. And next week is Mother's Day. Hey? We line things up well around here, don't we? So instead of handing out flowers to all the mothers at the door, you're all going to get a tent peg and you walk through. What do you reckon? Now, Andrew Heard's preaching next week and he assures us he'll be appropriate and helpful for mothers, so it'll be good. It'll be good. In some sense, the book of Judges is a simple book with some simple stories, easy to get your head around. Kids can get their head around the stories in this book. But it's also incredibly complex because it raises a whole heap of huge questions. Questions that we need to take time to wrestle with. I'm going to attempt to wrestle with one of them particularly this morning. And they're not easy. They're big questions about how could God let this stuff happen? How could God command for that kind of thing to happen? Is the God of the Old Testament different from the God of the New Testament? Some will come to that conclusion after you read books like Judges and think, nah, this must be a different God. Or he must have had some big personality change, you know, when Jesus came along. There's some big things to wrestle with, and we will be taking our time as we work our way through the next 10 weeks. In saying that, we are having a little break in the middle of the book of Judges. We're going to need a break. It gets too heavy. In the middle of the book of Judges, we're going to do a three-week series on family, and particularly looking at the family of God and how your family interacts with that. So that's going to be something good for us. You'll pick up on that in your daily reading notes as to when that's going to happen. But thinking theologically about this is this time in history, here's what is meant to be happening. This is meant to be that wonderful moment that all of the history for God's people has been leading toward. That wonderful moment where God's people are finally gathered and get to step into the promised land and live with God as king and enjoy freedom and life like they've always longed for it, and enjoy God like they've always wanted to enjoy him and live for a long time. Like, this has been the moment that everything's been building toward. God made promises to Abraham previous to this that he was going to make a nation and gather that nation and give them a great name in a great place. And so all of history has been working toward this final moment. And the leaders of God's people have been preaching to them for years, preparing them for this moment. You know, we read from Deuteronomy, that's Moses preaching to God's people, telling them that they're soon going to cross the Jordan and step into the land. And when you're in the land, here's how to live, to enjoy life and God. And here, it's all coming for you very soon. And it's important that God's people live very carefully in the land, that they love God and that they honor God and live for him and not worship other gods, so that they enjoy God's good blessing. They're urged through Joshua, in the book of Joshua, and all of his speeches, particularly his deathbed speech, to choose life and honor God. And here is the moment. Here is the moment where they come in. They walk into the land and it all goes terribly bad. It goes shockingly. The moment that was meant to be wonderful spirals. And we pick it up in the reading that we just had there in chapter 2. So come there with me. We'll look at verse 10 there. It appears as though the first generation of people that have walked into the land have done a reasonable job, although we'll get to their failure in a minute. It's very important. The second generation spiral. Look at verse 10. After that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, meaning after the first generation of people had died, another generation grew up who neither knew the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Like, that's just devastating to read those words. They neither knew the Lord or what he'd done for Israel. Now, no doubt their parents had been attempting to do the Deuteronomy 6 thing, which is to teach your kids about the Lord and tell you their kids all that the Lord had done. But this next generation either just didn't hear it or chose to turn from it, so that they neither lived knowing their God. They turned from the Lord and they turned to other gods. Verse 11. Israel did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and they served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, their God, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the peoples around them. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him and served the Baals and Ashtaroths. And here's the pattern that we get through the book of Judges. Time and time again, we get this exact same language that we get in verse 11. Israel does evil in the eyes of the Lord. They're unfaithful to their God and they turn and worship other gods around them. God responds in the same way every time. You pick it up in verse 14. God, in his righteous and just anger, responds like this, verse 14. In his anger against Israel, the Lord handed them over to raiders who plundered them. He sold them to their enemies. So God gives them the just consequences for their rebellion and unfaithfulness, and he hands them back over to being slaves, oppressed again like they were in Egypt, as punishment for their sin. And for a certain amount of time, Israel will live in slavery, oppressed, and they will cry out to their God eventually, and God has compassion on them. He hears their groaning and he brings a savior in the form of a judge. And we get this cycle over and over again through the book of Judges. Look, verse 16, where the judge arrives. Then the Lord raised up judges. And this really is a summary of the whole book of Judges. You get your head around this and you've got your head around judges, in a sense, the pattern. Then the Lord raises up judges who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. Verse 18, whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with that judge and saved them out of the hands of their enemies as long as that judge lived. So what you've got in throughout the book of Judges is 12, maybe 13 judges that come up at certain points in history, and no one judge actually saves the whole of Israel, because they're now all split up into 12 tribes in their own allotted pieces of land, and each judge only usually saves one or two of the tribes. And so the judges actually overlap, and they're in different scattered parts. And that section of Israel, that tribe of Israel, is only saved and experience momentary peace while that particular judge lives. But the minute that judge dies, the people just spiral again. And it actually gets progressively worse throughout the book of... I was going to show you the image. There's the image there, similar to the graphic we've got. And we try to put a spiral into the graphic because Israel spiral over and over again. You can actually... Is the judge's image there? I like pictures. Anyway, it's not there, don't worry. And what happens? Here's what happens. Each Israel gets progressively worse as time goes on. Look at verse 19. That shows you the spiral really easily. But when that judge died, the people returned to ways even more corrupt than those of their fathers, following other gods and serving and worshipping them. And you actually see each successive judge worse and worse. You know, Samuel, one of the most famous ones, right at the end of the book, who we think is just fantastic, he did something relatively heroic towards the end of his life, but it was only just to avenge getting his eyes poked out. It had nothing to do with the honour of God. He was just a dude with long hair going crazy, getting it cut off. He's not that good at all. The judges actually spiral. They're not that righteous. God's people spiral in such a way that by the end of the book of Judges, they're actually described as simply just one of the Canaanite pagan nations. They go that far. And you actually pick up that in chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. Look how it reads. Chapter 3, 5. The Israelites lived among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites. They took their daughters in marriage and gave their own daughters to their sons and served their gods. Israel, just another Canaanite nation. In fact, you could argue worse than the pagan nations by the end of the book of Judges. Technically, it's called the Canaanization of Israel. It's an absolute tragedy. So in some sense, the book of Judges is just one long, depressing story about how God's people get worse and worse and worse. Welcome to Judges. You know, this is fantastic. The final verse in the book of Judges, it's actually repeated throughout the book of Judges a number of times, says Israel had no king and everyone just did what he thought was right in his own eyes. Without a king, you make yourself king and you do what's right in your own eyes. That's the problem. Sounds like 2013 to me. Everybody living without a king.